This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now. Jeremy Lee in the building and every guest that you ever needed. Sports cards after hours keep the hobby heated. Updates, hobby talk like you never seen it. Sports cards live and none could ever beat it. Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Cards Live with your host, Jeremy Lee.
All right, everybody, welcome to episode number 204 of Sports Cards Live. It is Saturday night, November the 18th, 2023. My name is Jeremy Lee. I would like to thank everybody who tuned in last time. Our guests, we had a multi-segment episode. Jeff Wilson, followed by Mikey Singer and Amita Cheria, talked about the Expo. That was a great show last weekend. Next Saturday, our guest is Brian Wells, who is the founder of Ship My Cards. That should be a great episode. Tomorrow night on the channel, Josh Madigan joins me from the Hockey Cards Gong Show for our weekly PWCC hockey auction coverage. And on Monday, Michael Hathaway joins me for our weekly MC Mondays live eBay auction coverage. Both shows are always a blast and highly educational. Please join us. I'd like to ask you to join 500,000 people who've downloaded the Center Stage app across both iOS and Android for quick comps and card management features. Their app is the fastest and most accurate at card shows or at home to help you price your cards. You can build, organize, and share your collections with friends and find other collectors to follow using their social sharing features. Marketplace features are coming soon, so check out their Instagram account and please join me in supporting the great team they have and the innovation they are undertaking. Also, use protection, practice safe swaps. VeriSwap is an app and middleman service that lets you securely trade cards through the mail. Every transaction up to $1 million in value is fully insured by their guarantee. Check them out on iOS and Android. It is now live in Canada and will be opening a Canadian hub soon for a limited time. They are offering a free trade to anybody who adds 10 hockey cards to their account. There's a referral link in the video description below. Also, shout out Leighton Sheldon and Just Collect. He will be joining us for the Vintage Spotlight segment a little bit later tonight. And finally, ComC is now supporting Tag graded cards, and Tag is soon to roll out the new Tag X service, which will be a game changer. So be sure to go to taggrading.com and join the mailing list and join their Facebook and Discord communities. I want to thank all Sports Cards Live sponsors and partners for your ongoing support. And always thank you to all of you loyal viewers and listeners. If you're not yet subscribed to the YouTube channel or the podcast, please take a moment to do so. And all, as always tonight, your comments and your questions are in play. All right, let's get to tonight's guest. He started in the hobby in 1983, buying Topps baseball cards at the gas station and the Little Rock baseball card shop, chasing Willie McGee and Ozzie Smith of the St. Louis Cardinals. His favorite teams are the Houston Arrows, the Texans, the Rockets, the St. Louis Cardinals, the LA Dodgers because of Mookie, and Baylor University. And he is slowly being persuaded to become a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. His favorite athletes of all time are Charles Barkley, Andre Johnson, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Bob Gibson, and Nolan Ryan, originally from St. Louis, Missouri, currently hailing from Houston, Texas. Let's bring him out. David Ratliff. Welcome to Sports Cards Live, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. That I now realize I gave you a lot more than a mouthful on that introduction. So, but, you know, compared to also the number of sponsors you have to cover, I mean, you've got to come heavy into this show, I feel like. So anyway, thank you very much for that. I appreciate getting all that out.
My pleasure. It's good to have you. It's been a while coming. We got to meet for the first time in person at Dave Marino's Cards and Cocktails event at the National just back in July. I remember you were standing. I think you were standing with Coach Co.
Was it?
And I came over and said hello. We had some nice conversation, and since then I said, "Yeah, well, we'll definitely get you on the show eventually." And you know, I do schedule this out a few months, so here we are. It's good to have you on. You are very active on Instagram. You have been in the hobby, again, like I just said, since really 1983, opening those. And when we were chatting the other day, you know, I used to open 83 Topps Baseball too. Mm-hmm. Ryan Sandberg, Tony Gwynn, right? Wade Boggs. I mean, those were three key 80s Hall of Fame baseball rookie cards. Do you still have any of those to this day?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, as I had also kind of transitioned into the autograph world, I do not have a Tony Gwynn rookie auto yet. Those kind of got away from me. But no, I actually love that for autographs. But I also, you know, totally understand why some people would, you know, just like to collect it anyway. But yeah, it's still one of my favorite sets of all time.
It's a great set because you've got the action shot and then you got the headshot in the corner.
The headshot just makes it, right?
Right. Those were great. They did it in hockey in the 84-85 Topps No Peachy sets through the Steve Yzerman rookie year. Okay. And I remember putting those sets together and just loving that extra picture on the front. Yes. At the time, it felt revolutionary, even though you go back to the 50s and baseball and you've got action shots and
with the big head. Yeah.
Right. 55, 56 come to mind, of course.
Yeah.
Right there. So let's just learn a little bit about you before we dive into our topics. A bit more about your history in the hobby. I mean, again, you started in 83. You run a one-man show company right now called Signed and Slabbed. Maybe just take us through the progression. You know, how did you go from 83 buying cards at the gas station, searching for your Cardinals, to starting Signed and Slabbed, and maybe let people know what Signed and Slabbed is?
Yeah, so you know, as most collectors, I played baseball as a kid, got interested in it, and discovered the cards. So I started collecting those. By about 1988, I also had sort of discovered 86 Fleer basketball and some of the football stuff as well. And my parents actually ran a bookkeeping and accounting tax return sort of service. So they were entrepreneurs that way. And they encouraged me. I was spending so much money of my allowance at that point. They encouraged me to open a shop. And so we did as basically a sophomore in high school, because the small town that I lived in Arkansas at that time didn't have a shop, but we had a bunch of people that would come through, especially in the summer, from Memphis. And so I opened that store and ran it while I was in high school. And then ultimately, you know, and we were direct. I had a direct relationship with Upper Deck and one of the other. I don't think I ever got Topps, but maybe I had Fleer at that point. And, you know, use a lot of that extra inventory when I was in college. And so I was still doing a lot of buying and selling of cards in college. So that was like 91 and 95. After I graduated Baylor, moved to Houston is when I got into the autograph world. And so I did a lot of in-person autograph seeking and then a lot of stuff at shows. And, you know, by trade, I was an accountant and, you know, in accounting and finance in the energy trading commodity space for 20 plus years. And had most recently been a CFO at an energy brokerage firm here in Houston. And I kind of realized maybe I needed a break, but also my son was only going to be around a couple more years before heading off to college. And that just kind of hit me as, you know, the corporate world will still be there, but I want to be available to do that stuff with him. And so, you know, a little over 2.5 years ago, I left corporate America of my own accord and started just trying to do sign and slab, which, you know, my specialty is really the autograph, especially autograph rookies or other kind of autograph cards. But, you know, I chose the name sign and slab because I, you know, I wanted people to understand I love autographs, but I also like the slab cards. I collect a lot of cards. My core collection is more vintage, but I like things that are signed. I like things that are slab. I especially like things that are both. That's really my specialty. And so, you know, that's when when I started my first sort of social media account and, you know, saw people on Instagram and got going from there and have just built the following since then. So that's kind of how I've gotten to here. And now I'm seeing if I can keep doing it so that I don't have to go back to corporate America, or, you know, possibly even looking at, you know, are there positions actually within the hobby with some of the companies that might make sense for somebody with my background and skill set. So we'll see what happens. But for now, I am trying to, you know, be the signed and slabbed guy, and you know, having fun with that. I enjoy going to the shows. People, you know, like you had seen me at the National. They've seen me. You'll always see me normally at the Dallas card show. You'll catch me as an attendee at the Houston shows. But I put more on my calendar for 2024. So I will be in Atlanta at Culture Collision. I'm talking to a couple people about trying to get out to Burbank. I've mentioned to you and the Canadians have always been super nice to me, despite my complete lack of knowledge and understanding of hockey. And I don't collect it at all, but I've hit it off with yourself, Coach Co, the Cartel, Hit 'em High, so, several others. So, a little name drop there for my best buds, but I want to come to the expo at some point. So, I've enjoyed especially that part of the social media aspect of the hobby, because I wouldn't have met most of you people if it weren't for Instagram. So
that's what the social media does. It helps really build this community and bring people together that are of like mind. And it's a great thing. I mean, we make so many friends that we otherwise just wouldn't have if it weren't for the hobby. You left corporate America 2.5 years ago. So we have that in common. We both transitioned out of finance careers and into the hobby full time. So another commonality that we have, and something that, you know, perhaps we will continue to bond over as the months and years go by, and we sort of support each other and others that are trying to, you know, they're just love this space so much and really just want to dive right into it. Let's say a couple of hellos. Jake Dahl, happy Saturday. Saturday, good to have you. Justin Bode, good to see you. Punt Pass Click says mega comment, posts his mega comment. A little bit of a foreshadowing of one of the topics to come. Sylvain Lachwine, good to see you. Welcome to the show. Hobby Champs LGC, what's going on? Good to see you. 2 cent hockey cards. Justin Bode says that's a lot of St. Louis, baby. I'll take it. Robert Scott, good evening. Jeff McMahon. Justin says, you got to love the memories of buying the packs from the gas. I mean, that's what it was. It was corner stores.
It was absolutely gas station. Like, you know, and I mean, guys, they weren't even like where I live. The gas stations weren't also a convenience store at that time. So like, you know, you went in and there might be a little bit of bubble gum and some candy. And then always like on the bottom rung, there's these boxes of Tops sitting there waiting for you. And wow, inflation. That back then, 25 cents a pack, man, would get it done. Yeah. Those days are long gone. But
my $2 a week allowance bought me 8 packs every weekend in the early 80s. Stukes, what's going on? Nick Hatton, welcome to the show. Orlando is here. Welcome as always. Foul Five Ball. Lashwine says, quite the inspiring story. Congrats on making the transition from corporate. I know Lashwine is looking to do something similar. Mark Santucci, the Toronto Expo card-wise was great. Weather-wise was very tolerable. It was very good. And no, my wife did not come with me. Colin Murray, What's going on? Welcome to the show. And Cousins Collectibles Podcast in the house. What's going on, Tony and Oz? Good to see you, fellas.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, David. Let's get into our topics, and let's start with the one that is most present on... If you are on Instagram or you watch some YouTube in the past 24, maybe even a bit more, 24 and maybe 34 hours or so, yeah. You have seen what's been happening with the sports card therapist, Mr. Rob Girard. Rob Girard is a friend of mine. We've done content together. He's been doing content for about 2.5 years now, I would say, David, when he started a Sports Card Therapist podcast, and a very popular podcast, a very popular Instagram account, and an all-around pretty nice guy. And but he made a bid on eBay on an Eli Manning Prism Gold out of 10, a refractor. I don't know when this was. It may be in the last 30, 60 days, something like that. Made a bid. What is now, and what's come out of this is that a lot of people are talking about the term mega bid, which is just a slang term for a big bid that you put to win a card that should just like dunk on every other bid that might be made by other people. I've made what we're now calling mega bids myself in the past. And a lot of people have made mega bids. We've seen a chain on Instagram today of people sharing their cards that they've mega bid and now own. Rob made a mega bid on this Eli Manning card and was caught off guard when the card sold for the amount of the mega bid, or as we understand. So the card might have been at $800 and he bid $1,850, thinking he'll win it for $1,000 or $1,100. But it was bid up to $1,850, and that's what he won the auction for. But he failed to pay for it. He just didn't pay for the auction, and he has been called out for that. I guess the underbidder was reached out to by the seller, and I might not have this technically correct, but the gist will be all right. He was reached out to by the seller saying, second chance offer, would you like it? Underbidder said, yeah, I think I'll take it. But can you tell me who the winner was that didn't take it? And the seller said, sure, here it is. Here's the guy's YouTube account. eBay account.
ID, yeah.
So the underbidder went to that eBay account, looked at it, and saw a couple cards for sale that he thought, oh, I think I've seen those before. Put two and two together and realized that those were Rob Girard's cards. And realized that Rob didn't pay for the auction. And then documented it with his chain of evidence on Instagram in a series of story posts yesterday. And this has since taken on a life of its own. And Rob's error in judgment, hobby faux pas, what a lot of people are looking at to be something that, you know, is really over the line, was not paying for the auction. Because when you place a bid on eBay, David, that is a contract. You place a bid, that is a contract. Whenever I put in a bid, and I've put in some stupid big mega bids before. Like I shared on Instagram today. There's a card that I wanted. It was sitting about $1,500. I put in a bid of $6,111.11 and it ended at $2,900 and something. I didn't know what I was going to win it for, but I would have paid right up to $6,111.11 because I knew that there's a chance that other people might mega bid as well, especially on a really important card that maybe doesn't come up very often. Rob didn't expect that, is my understanding. And then it was, I think there were at least two other people that put in really high bids.
Yep.
And they ended up being the same amount, which at first I was suspicious of. How could those be the same amount? That seems weird. Almost sounds coordinated. But then I realized, David, when you put a bid in on eBay and you don't win it, eBay auto gives you three or four options. And then if you touch one, so I think that's what happened. I think the two people that were underbidders at 1827 or whatever the amount was, I think those are eBay preset amounts. That is plausible to me. That makes sense. So, but Rob didn't pay. He thought that those were shill bids, or those were bids of people trying to bid the card up, which I would not have made that assumption, but I'm not in his head. So, I mean, I believe that that's what he thought that they were. But he didn't pay. And then it came out yesterday. And then Rob went, he went live, did an Instagram live to really apologize to the hobby and take responsibility and do his best to be accountable for not paying for the auction. And to many people in the comments, and I read a lot of those comments several hours ago, I haven't looked for the past 6 hours or so, but wasn't good enough for a lot of people in the community. People are unfollowing him and not listening to his content. I mean, Rob's done some great content in the space, lots of great content he's done lots of collaborations with a lot of people. And he's a really nice person. Rob's a really nice person. He's a positive person. He's a supportive person. He made a huge mistake, and mistake might be under describing what it was, because he didn't pay. Is that a mistake or is that just not paying? I mean, I don't know if that's a mistake. I think the mistake might have been bidding more than he was willing to pay, and then the real knock against him was he just didn't pay. Like, you got to suck it up and pay that bill. You got to take it in the chin. You got to pay that bill. Yeah. And look what's happened now. He's being attacked on Instagram. And listen, I'm a compassionate person. I have empathy for people. And I'm also a second chance person. I'm not saying that if you go murder somebody, I'm going to give you a second. No. Eye for an eye sort of thing. I will look at it that way when it comes to a lot of crimes. I'm not defining the man by that action in this one case. I think Rob's a pretty good guy in generally speaking. I've got 2.5 years of experience having conversations with him, and I like Rob. I respect Rob. Do I respect what he did? Hell no. Do I wish he didn't do it? Hell yeah. Do I hope he never does it again? Of course. Do I think he deserves to pay a price? Oh, hell yeah. Of course I do. Like, everybody knows you pay the auction. Number one, don't shill bid. And number two, pay your auctions.
Yes.
Like he had to know that he had to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna end my opening piece on this with that, David. I'm gonna turn it over to you to get your thoughts, and then we'll go to some comments.
Okay. So you pretty well laid out the timeline. But I do want to kind of add a couple pieces to that. So, you know, we only found out in hindsight that he had, you know, not paid, but there were some comments on a different thread about that particular Eli and several others where he was like, he had said he'd bid on it and was congratulating the winners, which, you know, now in hindsight kind of looks like that's a little bit of a bad look. And then from what I saw today, Jeremy, he's nuked the apology video and he took his account private, which didn't really allow the people that he had blocked that were commenting on that during the morning before his apology video, you know, doesn't really allow them to come back to do anything unless they, you know, go ask. To be able to follow him now, and like, why would they even do that? So there does come the question of like, did those sort of subsequent actions feel very much like taking accountability? Because, you know, look, no one's going to condone not paying, right? It's super simple. If you bid, you need to be ready to pay for it. The end. There's no other discussion. It doesn't matter what you think might or might not have happened. You pressed bid, you need to be ready to back that bid. And, you know, I would, in my opinion, this is no different than the shilling world. And I said it then about shilling. If you're shilling, you're a cheat. That's what you are. And there should be no debate about that. The same thing here. If you're going to bid and you don't pay, you're a cheat. And like that, that's not specific to the hobby. That is in anything else, anywhere else out there. We don't have these other bills that you can't pay, right? If I don't pay my electricity, there's a consequence. If I don't pay my car note, there's a consequence. And you know, unfortunately, kind of the hobby has had little to no, any real serious consequence around shilling or non-paying. Like we all know that that's kind of been a plague, and we're, you know, we've seen some actions by some of the auction houses and eBay to try to, you know, move things over to auto pay at the end of auctions, which, you know, is a great topic for another time, is some of the issues that are involved with that. But, you know, I think everybody recognizes that something has got to be cleaned up. And so, you know, there's certainly the disappointment aspect of somebody with that level of following having, you know, made the decision not to pay. That's really disappointing. But I also, you know, I also appreciate the frustration and some level of the anger that some people have had about that. But I do think it's key, and you've touched on it, and I have this same, you know, note written down, that people on both sides of this tend to almost over-personalize it in a way. And what I mean by that is, like, the people that are sort of on the attack are very much almost kind of attacking the person versus the behavior. And I think it's the behavior is the core issue here. And that can kind of get lost in those attacks. But at the same time, the people that are really want to be there to kind of forgive and not necessarily defend, but, you know, readily participate in rehabilitation, I think some of that is also linked to some of their maybe personal relationship, you know, with Rob. And in my opinion, they tend to sort of overlook the person who got cheated. And so, you know, I think it's important that we kind of stop rushing to judgment, because social media tends to be a place for instant reaction and not necessarily entirely thoughtful processes. You know, if we can slow that down, that doesn't mean you can't still be critical, because I was today in my post, I think, a properly critical of what had happened. And I think the consequences, like loss of followers and people tuning out, and I mean, all of that's deserved. And I don't think it's going to be over. I think that people who are unaware of it should be made aware of it, and at least for some period of time, so that, you know, they can actually decide who they want to do business with and who they don't. Those things need to be important. They should be important. And the hobby has kind of created a culture where maybe it's not as important as it needs to be. But we, you know, there's still got to be, I am sensitive to the idea that, like, there's a human being element to it. Now, I'm not interested in getting into theological. I'm pretending to be Bill at Ephus Pitch. I don't want to get into theological and hermeneutics and eschatological debates over what he had done. We know it's wrong. He shouldn't do it. And so, you know, the path forward, people can decide how they want to handle it. And listen, there's also the question of, should he even have to apologize? You know, that's really up to him. And again, my disappointment was extended by the idea, like, putting the apology video out there was actually, I felt like, a really appropriate step. But if you're going to nuke it within 24 hours, like, you're kind of just feeding that frenzy of attacks. So, you know, again, I'm sure there was a bunch of crap in there too that he just didn't want to have to deal with. And so,
you got a lot of stuff. You got said a lot of pertinent points there. And I have a few responses to some of those. So the part about him blocking people and then taking down his apology video, I think that's the fight or flight instinct. You know, He tried to apologize. He tried to take accountability, which will come back to that. What really is accountability in this case? And he just got attacked and attacked and attacked. And listen, I mean, what are you going to, like, you know, someone's punching you in the face. Are you going to stand there and take it? Or are you going to run away? Right. Or are you going to, he's not in a position to fight back. He just wasn't, it's too overpowering. So he, and I get that response, and I'm not going to hold that against him, i.e. blocking people, nor taking down the video, because you're literally just putting yourself in the line of fire. And he's already definitely hurting emotionally. You know, he's got a family, he's got young kids, like, and I do care about that. I do care about a man and a family. I have young kids myself, so I have some compassion towards that. And I know that it can also impact his kids, and that's not right. No matter what he did, it's not like what he did is not something that's going to land. Like, there's no police involved. There's no crime here. It's just against eBay policy and hobby etiquette. And I'm not giving him a pass on that. Don't get me wrong. I want to give his family a pass on it. I don't want this to bleed into his family dynamic. So I don't hold the fight or flight response against him there. But let's talk about accountability for a second. Like, what is how does one become accountable? Do they need to sit in front of that line of fire and take it and get beat down and beat down? Is that what people want? Or does the hobby or the vocal hobby just want him to pay a price of losing some of his status in the hobby, perhaps not having as successful of an eBay account or a podcast or an Instagram account? Maybe that's the accountability. The other thing, I just want to bring up Sean Red's comment here. Sean here says, Jeremy, imagine losing my $6,011 megabit auction to Rob, and then he doesn't pay. And now I need to pay $6,000 instead of the $3,000 you paid if you wanted to sell. Well, that's not the case. That's not how it would work. That would be unfair. What would be fair is if you look at the third bidder. So Rob did offer in his apology video to make financially whole the person who bought the card and the seller. And I think the way you do that is you look at what did the person who would have bought the card if you didn't have to pay for it. So take Rob's bid out. And I'm not very good at analyzing bid history, but analyze it that way, because really, in Sean Red's comment here, well, I wouldn't have paid the $6,000. I would have said, well, no, your guy didn't pay. I'm not going to. There wasn't a third bidder right under my bid. Yeah. And in Rob's case, there were those two guys that bid $1,827. So I think both of them should be off the hook. And then I looked at, I think the next bid was like nine something or eight something. So in my case, if I was advising Rob, I would say, you need to pay the guy. If the guy spent $1,800 on it, you need to pay him back $1,800 minus nine, make him whole for $900, and then pay the seller the difference up to what you would have paid.
Your delta on the fee.
Delta. So Sean Red's comment here, well, I understand what Sean is saying. That's not technically how it should work out. That would not. Sean says, God, I think you're like, I'm not, I'm just really trying to be logical.
No, and
I'm looking at this. And this, I think that happened
to me recently, Jeremy, where I had this same sort of event where somebody had outbid me. They didn't pay. And some of it is a flaw with eBay, because eBay's second chance offer puts it back to you at whatever that, you know, second bid was. It doesn't acknowledge, you know, who's the next bid underneath that. And like in my instance, the bid underneath, if you eliminate all bids from the high bidder and then, like you said, go to the third bid, I should have been paying, you know, around half what the thing had gone for. So part of it is just, it's a, let's call it a technological inconsistency around how eBay handles the second chance offers. eBay is looking at it as if you have a second item to sell, not as an individual auction, right?
Not an item that is only 10 made and like people have been waiting a while. Okay, we're going to take a short break from this topic. We're going to bring on Leighton Sheldon for the Vintage Spotlight segment. So a little intermission. I know there are people that are having sort of hobby fatigue, drama fatigue. So let's take a break in honor of the people having fatigue. Let's bring Leighton on. Leighton, welcome back to the show. Vintage Spotlight segment. How you doing today, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. How are you today, David?
I'm great. I'm excited you're here, because I've got two questions locked and loaded for you.
So. Well, I got one locked and loaded for you, David.
All right. Well, let's jump in. Let's do this. Everybody, first, please welcome Leighton Sheldon back to the show. You can follow Leighton on Instagram, Leighton_Sheldon, _collect. Leighton, how do you like my shirt tonight?
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate the look.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Check out his podcast, Trading Card Therapy, not to be confused with the Sports Card Therapist.
maybe I should have chosen a different name, but no, joking aside, I still like the name.
So, yeah, okay. Well, with that, let's get into the questions you guys have for each other. David, why don't we kick it off with you?
All right, let's start. We'll start with the tough one, and then I'll give you the layup later a second. My first question for you is celebrity involvement in the hobby a good thing that brings awareness, or is it simply entertainment because who wants to watch me open a box? Or is it just a cog in the hype machine that actually could be bad for intelligent collecting down the road?
Great question, David. So I'm going to give you what my gut tells me. And my gut tells me it's a good thing because I've been a hobbyist for multiple decades. And I can tell you as a young kid, David, I dreamed about instances where the hobby, the industry, whatever you'd like to call it, would be as big as today. And I also understand that whether it be you have a favorite sitcom show or you follow a certain game show, there's celebrity gossip, celebrity endorsements that exist in all facets of our life. Yep. And there's plenty of intelligent people who don't listen to Jennifer Aniston when she says to buy this makeup, right? Mm-hmm. Or listen to Matthew McConaughey say to buy this car, but yet we enjoy looking at them or listening to them. So I guess that's how I would answer that.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I agree. I mean, someone put in the comment just now, Diamond Dog here says, as long as it's not Taylor Swift who's taken over the NFL, which is, I think it's annoying. But let me ask a question to both of you. Is Taylor Swift dating Travis Kelce and being in all these games, is that good for football as far as the business of football, the hobby of collecting cards? Is it good for the sport? Not on the field, but just, you know, in media, is it good or is it not good? What do you guys think? David, what do you think? Is it good or not?
I'm personally sort of indifferent to it, but I'm looking at it through the lens of a sports fan. And so, you know, Taylor doesn't bring me any additional awareness, but, you know, having a son in college that has a girlfriend that's not necessarily really a sports person, like, she's all of a sudden aware of Travis Kelce. Now, that may not be good for Travis Kelce if he's not able to, you know, ultimately seal the deal here. So, but I think his brother's already warned him about that. But no, I think, you know, at the end of the day, some collaborations may make some sense, but, you know, the NFL was already pretty popular. So, they may think it helps him. I'm not sure. It feels a lot like celebrity gossip culture almost to me, invading sports a little deeper.
Yeah. And so, Leighton, my thought, Leighton, is that I find it distracting and annoying personally. If I'm going to watch football, I have zero interest in seeing Taylor Swift in the stands, like zero. What about you, Leighton? What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, on a personal level, I am not for or against Taylor Swift. My sister is in like the Etsy business of making craft earrings, and she makes earrings that look like the ones that Taylor Swift wears on the stage, whatever that's worth. I guess I bring it back to what David just said a few minutes ago or asked me a few minutes ago. I just generally believe that the more spotlight we can put on a hobby / industry. Now, once again, I'm not talking about football here. So if you're talking about football, I agree with you, Jeremy. Like in the middle of the Jets game, I don't need to see, you know, what she's up to in the booth, like cheering on Travis against the Jets. The Jets already have enough problems, right? So, you know, I think that as far as football goes, it doesn't really matter much to me. And as far as the hobby, I think if it makes more people aware of the game of football, it's better for the hobby and the industry.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm with you. All right, Leighton, you have a question for David. Let's hear it.
I do. So, David, I spent some time looking at your Instagram account because I wanted to, you know, understand a little bit more about who you are. And I didn't realize that we actually collect, I guess, similar things as far as autographed cards. Yep. So I was curious, and I saw a post about the Griffey Upper Deck in his jersey card. But I was curious, my question is, do you have a white whale autograph card that you've been hunting for many years? And if so, what is it? And do you think it will ever pop up?
Ah, that's a great question. When I think about who my favorite players are, that's probably where I'd gravitate. And my favorite baseball player ever is Walter Johnson. But, you know, he's got a lot. There are a lot of autographs, checks, and other things, you know, that you can find. I'm not confident I've ever seen a T206 autographed by him. So, but I know that, like, you know, there's Cobbs and there's, you know, there's Gowdy Ruths and all kinds of other stuff. So yeah, if now my favorite Walter Johnson is the T204, the Ramleys.
Great.
So like, if that ever popped up autographed, like I'm not sure what I would do, because I mean, we both know that if something like that ever came up, I'm not the only guy that collects Walter Johnson. I'm definitely not the most, you know, the deepest pocketbook for that. But yeah, that would probably be it for me. Either a T204 or a T206 by train.
Great choice.
Right on. David, do you have a second question for Leighton?
Mine's right along the same line. So I think you're a big vintage basketball guy, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can only pick one. Do you want the 61 Fleer Wilt Chamberlain in a PSA 10? That's a pop 3. Or would you rather have a 61 Fleer Chamberlain autographed? We just saw one go off in Heritage, and I think that may have been the best one available out there, certainly one of the couple. Or a 61 Chamberlain game-used jersey.
Oh, you're killing me. So I'm going to give you the order. And remember, I didn't have any time to rehearse this, folks. So I'm going with the game-used jersey first. Even though I'm not necessarily a jersey collector, I do appreciate the history of basketball. And I understand, you know, I went to the Hall of Fame when I went up a few months ago to the Boston area in Springfield to do a deal. And I went there for several hours by myself. I would definitely go with the jersey first because it's history in your hands right there. And it's extremely rare. Second is definitely the rookie. It's pretty the signed rookie, excuse me. Pretty close to the first, but you know, it's because I'm working on a signed 61 Fleer set. I don't have the Chamberlain. And as much as I appreciate the Chamberlain and the 10 as rookie, I'm one of those card guys. Like, I'm okay with the 8 or a 9, David, to use your phrase. I don't have the deepest or biggest pocketbook. So, like, the 8 or 9 will just be okay for me.
Yeah. It's the exact same order I would have had, Jeremy. But I talk about this. I talk about the game use stuff a lot. So it's nice for everyone to hear someone like Leighton. Also, we've been trying to tell you. And no, I don't think either one of us would take that jersey and cut it up into 250 pieces and make cards out of it either.
No, if I did, I'd want someone to check me in somewhere.
the jokes we could tell right now. Yeah. Okay, good. Leighton, anything else you'd like to mention? What's going on? Anything going on? Just Collect Vintage Breaks you'd like to let the audience know about?
No, listen, all I would say is that I guess, you know, I heard a few minutes of what you guys were talking about before. I just think in general in the hobby, just like in life, right, try to treat others the way that you want to be treated. It's not that hard. It really isn't. And so along those lines, Jeremy and I were texting earlier today. David, we're going to do something really cool on the show here next week. We're going to give away a free graded vintage card. Jeremy and I will kind of hash out which one it should be, but it's really an appreciation of Jeremy's audience, the hobby as a whole. And you know what, I'm coining something called Cards Giving. What we're doing all week here, you know, locally in New Jersey with our Just Collecting our Vintage Break store is really a great time to give back. So that's what I would encourage folks around Thanksgiving time is just be grateful that the hobby, yes, it's flawed like anything else is in life, but there's so many great people. There's so much great stuff. There's amazing stories to be told. So just try to look at the bright side of things. And you know, if you're not sure, you know, and David, I'm curious, and Jeremy, I'm curious as well. This is kind of my last, I guess, thought I would ask you guys is, you know, if you're not sure about something, if it makes you feel uncomfortable, it's okay to pass. You know, if you don't buy that grail for your collection because it's gone too much, or you're not sure about authenticity, or you're not sure if one's going to pop up at auction again, more than ever before, I've been confident in my collecting journey to just pass, and it'll be okay if I don't get that item. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's a great message to send. I think that, you know, use your spidey senses, go with your gut, you know, on different things, whether it's just the card or the person you're dealing with, especially dealing remotely. If you're bidding on an auction and your spidey senses are tingling, maybe back off. You know, now if it's the only card of its type that you need, you might have to take some added risk. But there are very few cards that I need that I cannot talk myself out of if I want to, by saying to myself, there's always more cards to buy. There's always more cards. So I think that's a good message to send, Leighton. But I also want to say, and yeah, you reached out to me unsolicited today and said, I want to give something away to the audience. Let's do it. I said, let's do it next week instead of tonight, because we could promote it and let people know that we're giving away a card instead of being, oh, by the way. So next week on the show, Brian Wells from Ship My Cards will be in David Simon Slab's spot next week, and we will be giving away. Leighton did send me an option of two cards. I'm just going to pick the one I like the best. I think the one I think that the audience will like the best. That's what I will do. I'm sure I'll throw some of my bias in that decision, and we will do a giveaway to everyone who's in the chat will be eligible to win that card. And Leighton, thank you for your generosity. That was a very nice thing to volunteer. And I'm looking forward to that show next week and having you back on. So thanks for coming on for the Vintage Spotlight, everybody, with Leighton Sheldon of Just Collecting Vintage Breaks. Listen to his podcast, Trading Card Therapy. Follow him on Instagram. It's on the ticker. David, thanks for bringing questions for Leighton. Leighton, thanks for bringing questions for David. Thanks, Leighton.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Same to you.
Thanks.
All right, David. We do have more topics to talk about, but we have to continue with the last one that we just took a bit of a break from. Yep. But I want to go back. We got lots of comments, and I took some of the time when you guys were asking each other questions to go through all the comments that have been coming through, and I've selected about 10 of them that I want to address. So let's do that, and then we can see what we want to add. Skeppy here says, your electric bill or gas bill is not a proxy bid situation that can be manipulated. I'm not defending non-payers. I'm saying there are things going on that are far worse. And that's the reason why I bring up this comment, is because I just want to remind people to keep it in context. You know, there's another comment. I don't know if I marked it, but somebody said, you know, lifetime of work can be destroyed in an afternoon. It happens all the time in life. Yeah, it happens when people are caught, you know, being Madoff, you know, when you're robbing everybody their money, if you murder somebody, if you commit a crime, you know, that is against a child, or, you know, a real crime. Now, I'm not saying that this was not something serious in our hobby. This is very serious. I get that. I know that, but there are far worse things going on. And let's, you know, I just want to keep it in context. I mean, as Leighton said, and somebody else just said, you know, the hobby is filled with flawed people. The world is filled with flawed people. The hobby is filled with flawed people. And I would have to guess, David, that everybody who has sent a comment to Rob or commented about this critically, and I'm not saying, and I don't mean like the way I think we're being very fair about it. We're not attacking the man. Well, I don't think we're attacking the man. I think we're attacking the behavior. And we agree that the man should pay a price, a penalty for this. I think that goes without saying. But there are worse things going on out there. And I just want to remind people, as Leighton was saying, you know, there's a couple things. First of all, we should all learn a lesson from this. Oh, what I was saying was that everybody who's lobbed a harsh criticism or attack against him and want to see this guy like disappear and ruin his life, I would be willing to bet money, David, that, you know, 95% of those people have something in their past that is probably worse than not paying an eBay auction. So there, I just, you know, right? I mean, come on.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. I've eaten a peanut out of the barrel at the grocery store before. That's theft. Yeah, I've done that. I've stolen a peanut from the grocery store. I stole from a grocery store a peanut. Has anyone else done that? I don't know. Am I the only person in the hobby who's ever done that? You know, like, so I'm just like, let's try and keep it in context. Now, within the hobby, okay, within the world, eating a peanut out of the barrel at the grocery store, minor. Nobody cares. In the hobby, this is more major. I do get that. And I'm not making light of that. I'm not. I don't think I've said anything that makes light of that. Punt Pass Click here says, who wants to spend time monitoring his hobby rehab? Here it is. A lifetime of hard work can be erased with one error. Happens in real life all the time. Yes, it can be. And that might be the price he pays hobby-wise. Diamond Dog says, seek accountability and take responsibility for your action is a principle of leadership. 100%. Yes, accountability, take responsibility. We spoke to that earlier. What does it look like to be accountable and take responsibility? I think in his apology video, he tried to do that. I think the problem with the apology video was he talked too much about some other things and right. didn't focus on this is what I'm going to do to make it right. And it kind of got lost in the middle there. And I think not everybody maybe caught that piece, which I thought was the most important piece of it all. Maybe the most important 30 seconds of the nine minute video. Yep. Diamond Dog here also says, hard to imagine this was his first time doing this. Well, listen, maybe not. I mean, that's a 50-50, I would say. Like, it's hard to imagine it isn't his first. It is his first. Sorry, whatever the opposite of that is. Yeah. Like, why?
That's we don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
I mean, just speculating and casting additional shade. I mean, it's natural to go there if that's the way you're thinking. But I don't agree or really support that type of accusation. Unless
it's a consequence, right?
No, it's absolutely
a consequence.
He did it twice that day. So, but I think that's part of this discussion. But did he do it in the past? And if he did, I mean, then he did. And Diamond Dog, his assumption is correct, and it very well might be correct. But I'm not willing to conclude that right now. Mike Nanya says the fact is he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he only apologized because he got caught. He even made a past videos about shilling. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. If he didn't get caught, this would never have come up again. Right. So yes. Mike Nanya makes a very, I think that's an accurate point. I don't think that Rob would have admitted this freely if it didn't happen. Then he says he even made past videos about shilling. I don't think the bid was made as a shill when the bid was made. I think after it turned into somewhat of a shill because it wasn't made. But I genuinely, now this is an important distinction, everybody. So please try to follow along with this, what I just said. The bid itself, when it was made, the intention behind it, I don't think was a shill bid. I do not think he made that bid without the intention to pay. It wasn't his own card he was bidding on. When he made the bid, he thought he was going to pay for the auction. Only after did he realize that he wasn't willing to pay the price. Now, that's not right. I'm not excusing this. Please don't accuse me of excusing what he did. But I think that the bid turned into something like a shill bid after, but the intention when it was made, I don't think was the intention of shilling. David, do you agree with that, or anymore you want to add to that?
No, shilling and not paying are not really the same thing. But you know, as I said earlier, and I'm going to continue to be consistent on this, I think both of them are basically cheating the system. It's cheating other bidders. It's cheating the seller and the platform. And so from a, you know, from that perspective, it's similar. But you know, technically shilling and not paying are kind of two different things. But you know, either way, they result in a real inefficiency, and they both have impacts into confidence in pricing within the market. And it has been and continues to be a massive issue, which is why, you know, I think we all should be trying to do everything we can to root that stuff out.
Yeah, fair comments. I mean, yeah. Okay, let's keep on going through a few more. Mike, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Jeremy M., good evening. Welcome to the show. Chad Shipper, welcome to the show. Corey Carr says, sorry, all, I came in late. A play on words right there. Very funny, Corey. I like that, came in late. Let's go to Brent, Deep Value. I'm not here for the trauma, I promise. Welcome. Titty Sub says David has mega hair. Playing on the mega. He sure does. Punt pass click says more people should have friends like Jeremy. Yeah, I'm just trying to be logical about the situation. That's it. I'm not giving him a pass, you guys. I'm just trying to be logical and look at it objectively as I possibly can. Diamond Dog says, I wish Rob the best in life, but hard to view him the same at the moment. I think that's fair. It's like the comment a few minutes ago. You spend a life building, or 2.5 years building up a reputation as a podcaster in the hobby, somebody who does what I do, goes and talks about these things, and then it can be wiped away in a moment. Like, I can tell you, I'm just too paranoid to do anything. I would never put myself in a position to get caught. Like, I sleep very well at night because I know that I'm toeing the line. I'm following the rules. And I wish Rob would have done that too, because it would have saved him, a person who I care about, the person. And I know, you know, he's a hobby father. He's a car dad, just like I am, just like David is, and many of you are. You know, I think about the deeper situation. So, but it is even for people who are his friends in the hobby, we're all going to be like, Rob, you did that stupid thing. Diamond Dog says everybody loves a good comeback story. And I mean, that's, you know, that's where we think about like rehabilitation and then making amends, showing true remorse. If you show true remorse, you make amends and you mean it. Like, you can't just fake it. You have to be super, like, you have to mean it. And I think, we will all judge Rob ourselves or assess the way he does that if we believe him or not. And I mean, I'm not going to try and convince anybody. I'm just going to share how I'm going to do it when I see those behaviors and actions. Mike Petty says he gets a game misconduct and a 5-game suspension for sprinkling too much health and wellness with shill bidding, which is a play on his opening statements. David, I'm going to review the comments that have come through in the past couple minutes, but any response to all of these things that we just went through?
So, you know, I think nobody likes talking about this stuff. I think it's important that we do, but I also want to kind of wrap it up, but let's do it this way. I think a lot of people are becoming more and more paralyzed with the ideas of shill bids. And so what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about why I had to stop worrying about it and how I just mentally get over it. And that's through a few things. The first thing I do is, first thing I would recommend to people, just do your research, right? Make sure you know what it is you're buying and set limits for yourself. I know for me, my limits need a little bit of wiggle room, but for the most part, I set bid limits, I set dollar limits, and just to make sure, you know, that I understand based on what my biases might be or my, you know, how I can get caught up sometimes, my own personal psychology that kicks in when I'm bidding. I need those limits to do that. And it's important to kind of review that and make sure that you understand how you react in certain situations. Don't get in a hurry. Be thoughtful about it, right? The times I've made the worst mistakes on stuff like this is when I hadn't really thought it through and I was just acting emotionally in the moment. I think it's important to find other people in the hobby to bounce ideas off of. I just did this yesterday. There was something in an auction that I wanted. I made a couple phone calls to people who knew my collection and knew a lot about me, and they just sort of helped me clarify some things that were in my mind. I mean, guys, at the end of the day, you have the most control over what you're willing to bid, and you've got to get comfortable what you're willing to pay. And at the end of the day, for me, once I've done that, I can't concern myself with what other people are doing. And I don't want to, if I continue to look backwards and under this idea that, like, you know, somehow if this thing hadn't happened, I'd be able to do this other thing. Like, the spider web of choices is impossible to assess, really. And it's kind of a futile exercise. Like, do I know I get shilled in Mookie Betts auctions all the time? Did I get shilled when I was building some of my sets? Yes, because people knew some of the cards I needed. But at the end of the day, I control my bids. That's really all I can do. I can control what, you know, paying for the things that I win. And at the end of the day, I always believe that there's something else out there. So, you know, barring, like you had mentioned, there are so few cards that really fall into that, like, I'll never, ever get another chance category. There's just so few of those. And like, and so if you can kind of, if you just move your psyche away from that idea, you know, I just think you can get a lot more comfortable with what you're doing. And which is, again, is not to say we need to talk about these things when they happen, but just don't let them paralyze you when you're chasing things down. You know, figure out the steps that work for you, control your bids, pay for your stuff. And I, listen, you'll sleep good at night, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, okay, Mike Petty here says, when I was 13, I stole butter from a store because I didn't want to wait in line. I was 13, not 40. Right, no, that's fair, right? Like, 13-year-olds do things. But, you know, just to make the point, Mike Petty, have you jaywalked in your 40s? Have you ever jaywalked? Have you ever crossed the street when the hand was red? Like, I mean, again, let's keep it in context here, right? There are worse things out there in the hobby. There is, even in the hobby, trimming is way worse. Counterfeiting cards, counterfeiting slabs, stealing cards at a card show. These are all way worse things, I feel, at least to me. Those are way worse in the hobby than not paying for an auction. Again, don't take what I just said out of context. I am not saying that it is not bad what he did in our hobby. I would never do that. I've paid all my auctions every single time, even when I pay more than even when I bid more than I want to pay. But when I make a mega bid, the term itself is kind of funny to say. When I make a mega bid, I always think to myself, what if there's another mega bidder out there who's going to drive me up? I once was the guy who drove someone else up, David. This goes back several years. A Roberto Luongo card from National Treasures was sitting like $250. It's a 101. I wanted the darn card. I'm like, this is going to go for $400 or $500. I think I bid $1,111.11. Bid with like 1 second left. It spun around and I got the, you have been outbid. I'm like, oh my God, there was another crazy idiot out there who bid over $1,100 for this Roberto Luongo card. And I didn't win the card. That guy hates me right now. He hated me. The funny thing is, I bought it back several years later on eBay for like $250. So right. I ended up saving money. But there are, you have to be prepared. Now, I don't know if that guy paid for it and never, it didn't come up for a couple more years. But if you're going to put in a mega bid, any bid, you pay when you win that auction.
Yes.
Now, I guess there is the situation. Well, what happens if there is a reasonable, you can reasonably conclude that you were shilled?
I don't care. My stance on that is it doesn't matter.
Do you pay and then investigate? I think you pay and then you maybe call eBay and deal with eBay and say, was I shilled here?
What I do, Jeremy, I pay and I move on because I just can't. If I've taken the other steps, if I've done the research, I know what I'm buying and I've gotten comfortable paying what I'm willing to pay. I just can't worry about that stuff.
David, I've said it on this show several times. I have been shilled a lot. I'm sure about it. I'm sure I've been shilled, but I don't really like, do I care? Yeah. It'd be nice to get that extra money back, but I don't spend any energy on it. I paid the bill.
Yes.
I was happy. I was willing to pay what I bid. You can go back and find me saying this. I bid what I was willing to pay. If I was shilled, I look at it as just the cost of doing business in this hobby when you get shilled. Now I'm not, now see, oh, so Jeremy's okay with shill. No, I'm not okay with shill bidding, but I can't control it. Neither can eBay. Only us participants can. So don't shill. Just don't shill. Okay. Deep Value says, I've seen mugshots of people who have some of the biggest hobby accounts. I'm with Jay Lee. I was thinking about his kids and his wife. I think that's an empathetic approach. Punt Pass Click says, Rob is also not a normal hobbyist. He has a podcast where he extols virtue on a frequent basis. Isn't he also a licensed professional in real life? Yeah, he is a he is an actual therapist who made who did something that we think he shouldn't. We all agree he should not have done for certain. He says he's not a normal hobbyist. Like, you know, you don't have to have a podcast to not be a normal hobbyist. David has an Instagram account. David, right there, is an influencer. If you are putting your opinions on Instagram, you're an influencer. Doesn't matter if you have a podcast or a YouTube channel, you are still as accountable, I would say, as anybody who puts their head, their face or their voice out there, in my opinion. Irish Flyer says, as long as he makes others whole financially, then I'm good with it. Valuable lesson learned, I believe. Yeah, I would just add one more thing to Irish Flyer's comment. As long as he makes others whole, learns the lesson, and never does it again, which I think is what he's saying in terms of learns the lesson. Titty Sub says, I think the issue is there is a higher standard to someone who puts themselves out there as a voice in the industry. Yeah, and that goes for all the voices, again, not just podcasts and YouTubers. It goes for anybody who's putting their opinions in their stories and their tweets or anywhere, I would think. If you are sharing your thoughts and opinions on things, I think you should be held to a higher standard. I agree with that. And, you know, as somebody who's been doing this for 3.5 years now, I welcome that higher, put that higher. I actually need that higher standard to be on me because it keeps me in line. I mean, I'm by the book. I'm by the book. At least I think I am. Mark Santucci says, did eBay shut down his account? David shakes his head.
They're not doing that. I don't know for sure, but I mean, come on. They're not going to do that.
They don't even know about. Here's the thing.
No, they don't even know.
They don't even know about it because he non-paid this. Like, I don't know when it was exactly, but I'm guessing it was.
Worst case, you got a strike, right?
Diamond Dog says, can forgive, don't forget. I mean, that's so reasonable. No one, let's face it, this isn't going to be forgotten. And it's going to be brought up over and over again for the next several months. People are going to be reminded about this. And yeah, Rob's going to have to live with that. Really simple. Titty Sub says, podcast guy backing podcast guy. Hashtag gang. I mean, I don't know if I've said anything that's backing him. Really, I don't think all I've shared are my opinions on the behavior. That's what I feel I've done. If anyone thinks that I have unreasonably backed him for doing something wrong, then, you know, let me know what I said exactly, because I don't really feel like I've backed what he's done. I just think that I have empathy for the man and the family behind the man. Simple as that. Justin Bode, I love you guys, but you gotta pay for your stuff. Yeah, of course. And there's no doubt.
Justin, have you heard anything different from me? I don't believe anyone has ever heard or seen or thought any differently. I've consistently said this. And by the way, let's just make sure that it's on the record. Adam at The Real Guy and Rob, when they did their shill bidding content, Adam did a first episode with me about it. And part of that was because Adam is a very empathetic person. He doesn't want to be involved or contribute to what some people call the negativity comment. And I sort of made him, you know, do that with me so that we could try to talk about the shilling piece that had gone on with Shay in a more reasonable manner that wasn't just, again, personalized on a person. And so then Adam and Rob did one together as well. And so, you know, the timing of that ends up being ironic to then transition over to this non-paying issue. But like, no one's going to pretend like that's not what I've said. I've been very clear. If you bid, you need to pay. And if you don't, you're a cheat. It's that simple. End of conversation.
And let's keep it going here, though. 4x4 Rubicon says, in my opinion, who is really at fault at the end of the day is eBay. They allow non-payers a massive scale and they do nothing about it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not willing to. I understand that comment. It is within the environment. The platform does allow you to not pay. I think they're trying to do something about that with automatic payments, which I think they should. But I don't really care that eBay lets it happen, Rubicon. And I know I'm not coming at you here. I don't care that eBay doesn't let it happen. We, as the hobby, Rob knew the whole time that what he was, that by not paying, that he was breaking the hobby's code. So yeah. I'm not willing to give the eBay excuse for Rob's action of not paying for the item. Collector's Dream said, Rob needs to come on your show, be completely honest, and admit his mistake. And I'll be honest, I thought about that. I've thought about having him on the show. And I don't know if, listen, I would be willing to do that to a degree. Maybe I will do that. But I also, you know, I don't know how much more I want to talk about this personally. Right. I'm booked out 3 months with guests on Saturday nights. Like, what are we going to, I'm going to bring them on in February to rehash this. I am literally booked up through January with guests. So, I would like to be able to do that for Rob, my friend, you know, who did something that I don't condone. But we'll see. We'll see, I guess. Hobby Champ says, I love Rob's round tables. Hopefully this won't affect them. I mean, he has done some really good content in the past 2.5 years. Very popular. He's a very popular YouTube show and podcast. Justin Bode says, I've been in crazy situations, but always pay, baby. Yeah, good for you, Justin. Keep it up. And that's what we should all be doing all the time. Diamond Dog says, I enjoy all of Rob's content. That's very nice. Mike Petty says, nope, never jaywalk, but I do speed in the resto mods once in a while. Yeah, I mean, so like we all do things that are maybe against the law here and there. And you know, hobby law to us is as important as real law, right? Like it's hobby law. You don't shill bid and you pay for your auctions. That is hobby law. Unfortunately, there's no governing body to really enforce it. Deep Value says, with so much shilling, I won't mega bid. Well, then you've never wanted a card bad enough, Brent. I mean, that's it. That's as simple as that, really. You've never wanted a card quite as bad as some of us have. Hobby Champ says, I said this yesterday, Rob committed a hobby misdemeanor, not a hobby felony. Life goes on. I think that's a reasonable comment there. Like I said, he's not trimming cards. He's not counterfeiting cards. And I don't know where these things rank, and I'm not going to be the one who ranks them. And maybe I will rethink this. You know, as I'm going to bed tonight, I think actually not paying for an auction is as bad as trimming or counterfeiting or cleaning or whatever it is that people hate going on that goes on out there. Mike, welcome to the show. Mike Double V. Okay. All right. Lots of comments.
Next topic.
Here we go. Who said it? Someone says new topic. So let's do that, David. All right.